Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
You're listening to an encore edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Kimberly Stewart. She's written 8 novels, and she started her writing career not long after she started her family. So we'll talk about juggling writing with pregnancy, nap times, and preschool, and we'll also talk about her latest novel, Heartland. But first, like so many Iowans, Mark Wilson has been inspired by legendary Hawkeye football player Niall Kinnick Jr., winner of the 1939 Heisman Trophy. He has spent a lifetime admiring the man, and the last 10 years he's spent researching and collecting insights, images, and stories. He's published them all in the new book, The Way of Niall C. Kinnick Jr., published by Ice Cube Press, and he is here with me now. Mark, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for having me.
When do you think you first heard of Niall Kinnick? You've been a Hawkeye fan for as long as you can remember, but when do you think you first heard of the man?
Being born and raised in Iowa City, graduating from City High, living in this town for almost 72 years, it was my first year of college as a 17-year-old at the State University of Iowa. I pledged a fraternity, Sigma Nu, and one of my pledge brothers was Bill Green. And we were very close pledge class. You know, you have to stick together and do this and that. But on, I think it was Father's Day when you invite your dads to come to the university and they get to mingle with all of us. But Bill Green's father, Bill Green Sr., was a sophomore that played with Niall Kinnick Jr. in 1939. And Niall Kinnick, there's not a stadium named after, not much written about him back in 1964, but I was able to meet his father. And I was on that 39 team, and I asked myself, what 39 team? Well, Niall Kinnick.
Well, let's talk about that 1939 year a little bit, because there are people listening right now who are in the place where you were in college. Okay, I know, obviously, a few years after that, the University of Iowa Stadium was named after Niall Kinnick. So most Hawkeye fans, all Hawkeye fans probably at least know his name and many other people in the state. But let's talk about him. I mean, he grew up in Iowa. For the most part, spent his last year of high school in Nebraska. But then he came to the University of Iowa, and he was an athlete. He was a fairly small guy, 5'9", but he was an athlete, and that was one of his main focuses in life. And he got into football at the University of Iowa. Tell me a little bit about the early part of his football career at the university.
Well, he could have graduated at 16 at Benson High School in Omaha, Nebraska. He was a very young. His folks thought he wasn't mature enough to graduate at 16 and then go on to a big-time university like Minnesota or the State University of Iowa. So not many people know this, he did take his senior year over again at Benson High School in Omaha. And not many people know that. Now, that was one of the only years that he did not compete, but he took all electives, trigonometry, literature, chemistry, some of the hardest courses
right. Just
ever.
Just to mark time before he went to the university.
And he's always had this philosophy of helping the underdog. He went to Minnesota and had a tryout there, but they thought, I think he was just too small. And most people say he's 5'8".
Okay.
5'8 and 170 pounds. But he did end up at Iowa. I think he played football under 3 coaches, his freshman, sophomore, junior, and then Dr. Eddie Anderson came on board and changed everything.
And yeah, the Hawkeyes weren't much back then.
No.
In the mid-30s.
There are 5 seasons from 1930 to 1938, they didn't win one Big Ten game. in the 9 years before Nile came, and Dr. Eddie Anderson and Frank Carideo and Jim Harris, three coaches, all from Notre Dame in the past, playing for Newt Rockne, one of the greatest. They were down and out, and so it's hard enough to play for one, but playing for three coaches, Ossie Solem and Earl Tubbs and then Eddie. But he came on board, and there's an instant positive relationship between Dr. Eddie and Nile Kinnick. In fact, Nile was the only person he called by his first name. Dr. Eddie knew he was something special, and it was just amazing. They started off with 85 players in the spring, and all they did was do push-ups and sit-ups and run, because Dr. Eddie thought that if they're in shape, they can outlast anyone. And they had, and by the fall, it was down to 37. By the last game in the season against Northwestern, there were only 27 players left on that team, and most of them played the full 60 minutes. Nile played six straight games, and 42 in the last game against Northwestern. He played 402 consecutive minutes out of the 420. South Dakota didn't count because everybody played, and they beat them 41-0.
They called the men on the 1939 Hawkeye team, they called them the Iron Men. Mm-hmm. The ones that played without breaks got that title. So they, as they went through that season, they had these incredible victories that were really by the skin of their teeth. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my favorite game, Nile played, he was a multi-positional player. Now, in this day and age, players play their position, whether it's just left tackle, right tackle, or halfback. Nile, I counted these. He played eight different positions, and he was a master at all of them. A little guy getting away from those huge guys from Notre Dame and Minnesota. Minnesota had won three national championships before Nile got on board with Eddie in 1939. How do you win those games? Well, you're in shape, like I said, and many of the players did drop out. In 39, one of the biggest upsets in Hawkeye football history was the win over Notre Dame. I think they were number three in the nation at that time. And Iowa scored first on a play that amazes me still, because he's normally left halfback, and they have this I formation with this big shift to the right, and they call it the Notre Dame box. Well, Nile played this position, I think, for the first time in that 39 season. He played right halfback and did that shift, came over left tackle and scored the point, and then drop kicked the extra point.
Extraordinary. one of the things about Nile Kinnick that keeps his legend alive, and people who visited the Hawkeye Hall of Fame, the Athletic Hall of Fame, have gotten a chance to hear his Heisman Trophy speech. Mm-hmm. And that is, for many people, it's the only piece of writing that they ever encounter from Nile Kinnick. But it's an extraordinary speech. I mean, this was a man who was an extraordinary athlete, but also an extraordinary intellect as well, right?
Very prolific writer. His speaking was so eloquent. He read a lot. His favorite authors were Teddy Roosevelt, Winston Churchill. And he would read Tolstoy's, I think that book was 1,300 pages long, and he read that in a week. But he read everything, and he learned from that, and he had comments about these authors. And his favorite was Winston Churchill, the never say die type person. And I think he got a lot of information from that sentence that he thought typified him. But he did not want to play football. He wanted to go to law school. He wanted to be in politics. And Ronald Reagan even said, Nile Kinnick could be the president of the United States.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. That promising career was cut short in 1943 when Niall Kinnock died during a training flight while serving in the U.S. Navy. We'll talk about that in a moment. And the words of Niall Kinnock Jr. With me, Mark Wilson. He's the author of The Way of Niall C. Kinnock Jr. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com. Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I'll talk with Kimberly Stewart. She is the author of 8 novels. Her most recent is Heartland, and she lives in Des Moines. But with me right now is Mark Wilson, who has just published the new book, The Way of Niall C. Kinnock Jr., Insights, Images, and Stories of Iowa's 1939 Heisman Trophy Winner. It's out just recently from Ice Cube Press. And Mark, before the break, we were talking about the life of Niall Kinnock, and you mentioned he had incredible ambitions, and people thought that he could live up to all of those ambitions. He wanted to go to law school. He wanted to pursue a career in politics. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of his grandfather, who had been governor of Iowa, and his life was cut short because of an accident during a training flight in 1943. He left behind something that most young men who are 24 years old do not leave behind, and that is really extensive journals and letters. When you decided that you wanted to really dig into his writing and find out what made him tick, where did you go? I mean, what kind of a body of work is there?
Wow. You think back to February of 2008, when I had that little quote in my billfold while teaching.
And tell me about this quote.
Well, this quote was, I can't remember where I found it. There's been a lot of magazine articles. I don't think this has ever been in a magazine or newspaper. But what he said before he left for his service, what he said to his mom and dad, he was ready to serve his country. But the quote was, and I had this during my teaching career because I work with disadvantaged children. I was the only male in the Iowa City Community School District. There's one way I connect. Mm-hmm. But the quote said, "How I wish I could sing and play the piano. It's hard to be the head man in everything you do." So, and then it went on to say, the axiom, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well, has its limitations. Stay on the ball most of the time, but learn to coast between moments of all-out effort. This was the next to last quote he wrote in his military junior journal on June 1st, 1943. The last three words were, "People before prophets." And I can understand that in a little way. But that's what I carried around. You know, I referred to it, and you saw what I carried around. I
right.
told you that was a third edition.
Right. So you carried that quote in your wallet.
Yes.
That Niall Kinnock quote in
yes.
your wallet was an inspiration and a touchstone for you for many years. So when you decided to start looking for his words, for more of his writing,
mm-hmm.
what sources could you turn to?
Well, the University of Iowa Special Collections has a lot, lots of letters, all of his diaries and journals, his essays, copies of his speech, his commencement speech he gave when he graduated, the senior commencement speech. There were a lot of, you know, valuable resources that I could use. And I literally started writing them out longhand. I mean,
copying the quotes that you loved over
yes.
into a legal pad or
yes.
something.
But I but I couldn't find, I wanted one for every day of the year plus leap year that's coming up in 2020, and I just couldn't find enough. So I hear more about Niall over the years. Wow, he was third in his law class, his first year in law school. He was the University of Iowa ping pong champion. I mean, I could go on and on.
Right.
But he really fascinated me. And one of my chapters is fascination. One of my chapters is admiration for him. Then there's the inspiration chapter. And then there's the dedication chapter. And I dug deeper. I dug deeper and I found 366 quotes. And there are a lot of people that worked with me on this. So there's four especially, but it worked. And I went to my publisher and we had our first meeting in July of 2017. I think it was July 11th. And he said, "Mark, these are great, great insights, great quotes about life and topics of his day, because they're all relevant today." And he said, "Mark, I want you to write four chapters on how you connect to Niall Kinnick." Okay, he died in 1943, and I'm almost 72 years old. Can I do that? Yes, I did. And now I guess the rest is history,
right?
Because there's...
Well, and this is the summer. This was the centennial of the birth of Niall Kinnick. Were you aware of that when you started this process?
Absolutely not. I never planned this to happen. I never thought that the university would do this for him, to honor him on his 100th anniversary and his 75th anniversary of his death, and then have Fry Fest be the theme, and then on September 1st against Northern Illinois, it's Niall Kinnick Day. Yeah, I did not plan this, but it happened.
I'm talking to Mark Wilson. He's the author of The Way of Niall C. Kinnick, Jr. So I want to get to the phone because there are people on the line with us as well. So let's talk to Keith on the line in Osage. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Hi there. And you have a family connection to Niall Kinnick. Tell me about it.
Well, interestingly enough, his father went to Iowa State and was a quarterback of the Iowa State football team. You never hear anything about that, but he was. My father played on the team from 1912 through 13, 14, 15 years, and played on with his father, was the quarterback at that time. And I remember when the news came through that Niall Kinnick was missing, I remember my father calling him on the phone that day and talking with Niall's father.
Oh, wow. And clearly, it sounds like your father and Niall's father had a close friendship then.
Oh, sure. Sure they did. They played football together for 4 years.
Wow.
But it was Iowa State, not the University of Iowa.
Right.
You never hear that.
Clearly quite the football legacy with both of the men at two of our fine state universities. Keith, thank you so much for calling.
Yes.
I also want to get to Bill on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi.
Hi, are you the Bill we were just talking about earlier?
I think I am.
All right. Wait,
is this Bill Green Jr.?
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Oh, Bill.
Wonderful show. Oh. Wonderful insights.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Bill. And your father played football with Niall Kinnick Jr. Tell me a little bit about their relationship.
Well, my dad was a sophomore in 1939, and one thing I remember, in 1999, it was the 60th and final reunion of the Ironmen. It was Kirk Ferentz's first game at Iowa, and Kirk asked the remaining guys to come address the team on Friday night before the Nebraska game, and there were only five left alive at that time, my dad being one. And afterwards, I asked my dad, what did you tell him? What did you have to say? And he said, well, as Mark alluded to earlier, Iowa's football up to that time had been pretty miserable in the 30s. And Dad said I was a sophomore, and there were five or six of us are sophomores, and we didn't think that Iowa had to lose. There was no reason we couldn't win at Iowa. And he said that's what I told the team Kirk Ferentz's first year, and that was a tough year for Iowa. My mother, I said, before my dad gave that answer, my mother said, well, you know, I wasn't there, but I have a feeling I know what those kids thought about you guys. And I said, Mom, okay, what? She said, I think they were probably thinking, am I going to look like that when I'm 80?
I'm sure Bill, that's not so the only thing going through their mind.
It's so good to hear your voice, and thank you so much for calling in, my friend.
Well, thanks for the heads up, Mark, and thanks for the wonderful book, and I look forward to getting a copy.
Okay.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for calling, and I would love for you to share another quote from Niall Kinnick, because you shared the quote that inspired you that you carried around for so long, but could you share another one of the quotes that you collected to give us just a little bit of insight into this man?
Well, I mean, there's so many, and I could just flip. My daughter said she wanted to have, you know, be one of the people that endorsed this book. Now, mm-hmm. And she was being funny, but she said to me, our daughter, she said, Dad, this book you could put on your coffee table and it'll never collect dust. And I, what? Because all you have to do, you can pick this book up at any time. You can flip through this book, stop on any page, and read something about Niall Kinnick or how you connect to him or see an image of him when he was a little kid at 6 years old holding a football that was almost bigger than he. And I think she had a point there, because this is the kind of book that's like that. And But I'm going to flip through this book, and I'm just going to stop at something here.
Okay.
And I'm just going to give me a second, and I'm going to just open to this one right here. Now, he had quotes about government, war, poverty, race, economics, even love, the Bible, the kind of gal he wished he could meet someday. But here I just opened one about politics. I am interested in government, and we talked about that earlier, and have some ambition in that direction. Politics are not very clean, but they should be. Politics need integrity and idealism. Politics, more often than not, disillusion those who enter with those ideas. Of that I am fully aware. But what does not alter the situation? I shall proceed as best I can. And whether I lose 50% of the popular vote shall not deter me. I am doing what I think is the right thing to do. And he knew how difficult that would be. And you can see how relevant a lot of these quotes are today. And that's just one of 366.
Well, and I am struck by the fact that I already mentioned that he was preparing himself clearly for a career in politics. He was writing these journals for posterity. You know, you can hear the voice of a 19, 20, 21-year-old man trying to be more than he was, but also you can see that he is trying to prepare himself to be a great leader.
You're absolutely correct. And yet, he's still a humble man. He was a gentleman. He like I said, when Jim Leach's epilogue, former Congressman Jim Leach, who had 30 years in the House of Representatives, has one of the most unbelievable epilogues about his family's history with Niall Kinnick. And I brought a letter, and I won't be able to read it on the air, but it is in the book. And I'll just give you a little summary of it. Jim Leach's father, believe it or not, was a Sigma Nu. I was a Sigma Nu, and that just gave me chills. And Niall was a 10-year-old sixth grader. And Jim Leach's father, Jim Leach, sent Niall a baseball. And he wrote a two-page letter thanking him. It's so articulated so well his appreciation, because all the boys played with that ball, and it's kind of like the only ball you have. You can't lose it. But that's an epilogue that you'll have to read in the book.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. Thank you so much.
Mark D. Wilson, he's written the book, The Way of Niall C. Kinnick Jr., Insights, Images, and Stories of Iowa's 1939 Heisman Trophy Winner. It has just been published by Ice Cube Press, and it does contain images that you won't see in other places, and the words of Niall Kinnick. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Kimberly Stewart. Her latest novel is called Heartland. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My next guest is Kimberly Stewart. She lives in Des Moines and has published 8 novels. Her latest is called Heartland, and it tells the story of an Iowan who left home with a dream to make it big in the New York fashion industry, but falls flat and comes back home to rebuild her life. And Kim Stewart is here with me now. Hello.
Hello. It's lovely to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I know you've been prolific in writing books over the last 15 years or so, and I'm curious about how this started for you, because I know that your writing career started about the time that you started your family, which is a time in life when a lot of women have very little time and very little extra energy. Tell me how it began.
You know what? I don't know that I had a ton of extra energy. But I did. I went from teaching in public schools, which I loved, and I actually taught out here in Anamosa area, Anamosa High School, and I loved my students. I loved my job, but it was very social. And I went from being with my students and my colleagues to staying at home with my very, very little newborn. Her name is Anna. She's 15 now, but at the time, she was not super verbal. She was not talking with me.
It was pretty isolating.
It was pretty isolating. So my husband would come home from work at the end of the day, and I would just attack him with questions about all sorts of conversations. He was in the University of Iowa's dental school at the time. And so, I mean, let's be honest, those aren't incredibly interesting conversations at dental school, but I did it anyway. I was like, did they floss? Were they horrible flossers? So I think he was getting a little nervous and said, I think maybe you should revisit some old dreams, like writing. How about writing so that you don't scare me every time I come home at 5:30? So he was really the first impetus to say, you know, maybe you should just think about that. And so it was during nap time that I sat down with my laptop and just started hammering out word by word. And that's where it all began.
It's interesting because you are writing during this period where there's really been an explosion of what's called chick lit. Mm. And you kind of straddle that genre, I would say, and the romance genre, although you don't quite fit either category. So what sets you apart?
Well, that's a kind thing to say. I like it that you framed it in both of those worlds. I do feel like there's levity and there is fun in these books, but also I never want a reader to park her brain at the door. So I don't feel like for there to be a chemistry-driven romance that you have to give up thinking. And so I am kind of in a little mini niche of, I guess, romantic comedy, but they're not super saccharine and they're not, I hope they're not brainless. I really like to have some depth of the characters in the plot. So, I'm trying to hit my friends. I'm trying to hit the conversations with these thoughtful, smart, funny women that I hang around with all the time. And so I hope that through my books, I'm connecting with readers like that.
Well, and clearly you are connecting with readers. Do you remember the first time that you heard from a fan that wasn't somebody in your circle, wasn't a friend, wasn't your mom or dad,
right?
But somebody who reached out to you and told you what this meant to them.
I do. And I sat at my computer and cried. It's incredibly gratifying, right? For any person putting out a piece of their own work or their art, their writing, music, to have someone connect with you who's not in your DNA pool is just huge. I love my DNA pool. Thank you, DNA pool, for always buying my books. But to have someone, you know, go out of their way to say that was just, I have a folder called Kind Words, and I put them all in there. It's just, that's a lovely, lovely moment every time it happens.
So you were pregnant with your second child when you published your first book.
Right.
And you have three kids. So this was many years of trying to squeeze in the writing around nap times and other things. And you have said that you can't write with a lot of noise in the background, which sounds like an incredible liability for a parent. So how did you do it? How do you do it?
I do just what so many women are doing every day. You know, I carve out spots that I can, where I can have some quiet and some time alone. I really feel like I try to treat it honestly like a doctor's appointment and pretend that I just cannot miss it. Because if I look at the laundry pile and I realize I haven't actually scrubbed my toilets in a long time, then, sorry, Mom, then I get distracted. I really have to pretend like it's just something I cannot violate, that time with my writing. And then I also give myself the freedom when I'm done writing for the day, when I've hit my word count, then I shut that laptop and I go back to the rest of my life. I have to give myself the grace and freedom to do that as well. Otherwise, I feel torn no matter where I am. So.
Well, and we have legendary stories like J.K. Rowling talking about writing in a coffee house when she would walk until her daughter would fall asleep and then sit in the coffee house and write. You can't do that. That's too noisy for you. Well, so you used to write at the public library, right?
I did. I wrote an entire book at the West Des Moines Public Library, overlooking the Canadian geese, who are not incredibly interesting after like day two. So that was the perfect fit for me. I had a view of the pond, but I also knew I had to get to work, so.
Let's talk about Heartland. This is a novel, as I mentioned. It's about a young woman. She's about 28 or so, and she's gone off to New York City to try to create a career for herself in the fashion industry, and that falls flat, and she comes back home and has to rebuild her life. And of course, as I mentioned, it is a romance, so reconnecting with an old flame and with her grandmother who raised her and all of these things. But this, the idea for writing an Iowa novel actually didn't come from you. It came from your publisher. Tell me about that.
Right. So I had written another novel years ago called Act Two that had at least half of the book set in Iowa. And it was so much fun to write. And I was eager to do it again. But the opportunity came to me from my publisher, who approached me and said, you know, we'd really like a Midwestern story. And we think it'd be great if you would use your experience in Ohio.
Oh, of course they did.
I did. I let that one go because I was like, you know what? There are a lot of vowels. So I know. But you know what? It really was a total education for both sides of this. Right. For the New York side of things, they had a lot of questions and maybe some misconceptions about what Iowa is like. And for my side of things, I had to clarify often, you know, what is Manhattan life like for real? I've visited, but I haven't lived there. And so I think we both learned from each other. And I'm pretty sure they now are completely clear. It's Iowa.
So in writing about your home state, where you moved away for a long time, mm-hmm. and your husband actually had to convince you to move back. But what did you want to communicate with people? I know this will be widely read in Iowa, but it will also be widely read outside of Iowa. What did you want people to know about the state?
Well, it is impossible for me to talk about Iowa now without getting a goofy grin. I just think it's such a fantastic place to live. You mentioned I left for a while. I went to school in Minnesota, and then I lived in Chicago and Minneapolis. We lived in Costa Rica for a while. We lived in Nebraska. I lived in Texas. I kind of made the rounds. And then we did return to Iowa to raise our family and to be close to family here. And I cannot tell you how much I love it. I love the schools here. I love the communities here. This book talks a lot about the strong communities that make up our rural state. And so to be able to, you know, pay tribute to them and to the specifically to the older women who are living in those towns and who have given so much to those towns, I can't, no one will read this book and wonder where I stand on Iowa. I just think it's just a wonderful, unique, and beautiful place.
When you were asked to write a book about the Midwest, it wasn't just because your publisher wanted that to happen, but it's also an idea that, oh, wait, maybe there is something happening in the middle of the country that people should know about. Mm. So why do you think now is the time to tell Midwestern stories?
I think we're at a moment when, at least in literature, I hope in the larger public discourse, I think people are remembering that there's a very large swath of the country between those two coasts. A lot of the books that I have read particularly in kind of more pop culture books, a lot of them center either in LA or New York. And I think there's an awakening. It's quiet. And I think it can still gather some steam. But I've heard over and over that it's not just from Midwestern readers, but from also other readers who are really enjoying reading about and thinking about and talking about what's happening between the two coasts. And I love it. That is right up my alley, to be able to talk about what's happening here and to know that there are vibrant, thriving communities here in our state.
I have to ask you a question about sex.
Okay.
Because I mentioned that this is a romance novel,
right.
But you leave pretty much everything up to the imagination. And maybe things happen, maybe things don't happen. Have you felt pressure to be more explicit in writing romance novels?
I have felt that pressure. Yes, in fact, for one of my novels, we had, my agent and I had kind of a paltry offer. And with that, and it was from a very large house, a reputable one, that said, if you will just raunch it up a little bit, or a lot, actually, they recommended, we can sell more copies of this book. But yes, I have absolutely felt that pressure. I feel like it's there's room on the shelf for a lot of different titles, including Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. I really do. And you know, I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old who live in my house and who read my books. And so that's part of it, too, that I feel like if I'm having a larger conversation with them and then writing something that is not necessarily in line with those conversations, that would be sending a message that I don't want to send to my kiddos. So, like I said, there's room for all, but for me, I've really loved writing a book that has witty dialogue and some banter and some of that kind of chemistry building and doesn't necessarily jump straight to the bedroom.
Kimberly Stewart, she is the author of 8 different novels. She lives in Des Moines and started writing shortly after starting her family. Her most recent book is called Heartland. It's the tale of a young woman from Iowa who goes off to the big city to make it big in the fashion industry and then has to come home to rebuild her life. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Lindsay Moon. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter @Iowa Public Radio. I'm there as well @Charity Nubby. This is Talk of Iowa.